You're listening to The Nightside, hosted by Barb DiGiulio on News Talk 1010.
Every 4 weeks on a Tuesday night, News Talk 1010 Chief Legal Analyst Ed Prucci joins us for a segment that we call The Crime Traveler. And this week he's going to take us to the Galapagos. Ed Prucci is just back in town from a recent vacation, not the Galapagos.
Yeah, no spoilers. So I was on a vacation, used it for a little bit of future material, shall we say. So we'll definitely be talking about that. I guess I shouldn't say no spoilers. Anybody who's following me on Twitter or anywhere else knows. But we were in Florida, did some Disney. So I'm going to be giving you guys a comparative analysis.
Oh,
having
cool.
done Universal earlier, have some really good tips, I think, about how to manage what to many people is hell on earth, right? The most stressful vacation in the world, taking kids to a place like that, and to other people, of course, the most magical, most wonderful place in the world.
You know, before we get to the Galapagos, you were mentioning that you had a bit of an issue flying home.
I did. We were flying home on an Air Canada flight originally scheduled for 8 p.m., which didn't seem too outrageous to me coming back from Orlando, even though the kids would have to be in school the next day. I figured with a little bit of luck, it's a three-hour flight, get home, maybe midnight, get the kids a few hours sleep, get them back to class. That was changed from a scheduled perspective, you know, several months even before we flew to 9:55. So now I was already thinking, oh, great, we're going to be well into the early hours in the morning. And then it just got delayed and delayed and
oh,
delayed.
Boy.
And you know what? I don't blame airlines or Canada or otherwise for those kinds of delays. In this particular case, there was some sort of weather issue, not in Orlando, but where the plane that would have been picking us up in Orlando was headed to.
Okay.
And so it got turned around. But boy, the airline just did a terrible job of explaining to, you know, the hundreds of people waiting for that flight what was going on, how long the delay would be, where they should be waiting. And, you know, at a certain point, their own policy says they're going to hand out food vouchers to everybody, go get a meal. By the time they got around to doing that, well after the period of time that's within their own Air Canada policies, in Orlando Airport is a ghost town. It closes
it
at
does.
10 o'clock,
yeah.
Which to those of us in Toronto, you're used to flying through Pearson, other international airports, it makes no sense, right? Pearson at 3 in the morning may as well be a Jays game. Like, it's packed.
Yep.
There's lots of stuff going on and lots of options. In Orlando, if you're in that airport after 10, you work there.
It's quiet. Yeah, you're right. It's quiet at that time.
Yeah, so that very poor handling by Air Canada, and I did tweet them throughout the night, and they didn't seem to care all that much. So, thumbs down on that one, but it
all
is
right.
what it is.
All right. So let us get to the Galapagos.
Yeah. So this is sort of a two-part series, right? Because last month we started talking about Ecuador. And of course, and maybe this isn't obvious to everybody, but the Galapagos are actually part of Ecuador. So they are a very isolated island chain, about 600 kilometers off the west coast of the Galapagos. So even Ecuadorians, although they take great pride in the Galapagos being part of their country, they can't live on the Galapagos Islands unless you're a native Galapagonian, I think is the term, because you have to apply for a residency permit. It's very, very low population. It's about, I'd say, a dozen to 15 islands. There's some that are really small, you know, no more than just a rock, but 15 or so of actual substance and size, of which I believe only two actually have human population on them at all.
Wow.
So it's all one giant conservation area, very heavily regulated and policed by the Ecuadorian Conservation Authority, which is truly just a tremendous gem. And if you're thinking back to your high school education, this was the place that Darwin sailed to on the Beagle Voyage. So if you think back again to your high school or perhaps university education, and this is where he got the impetus to write The Origin of the Species, because as he was going from one small isolated island to another small isolated island, he started finding that there was just an enormous amount of what's called endemic biodiversity, animals that appeared nowhere else. Even if you went from one island and then just sailed another couple of hours or even sometimes less than that, you had a completely different set of animals. And I have this, the stats are really staggering. 80% of land birds in the Galapagos, 97% of reptiles and land mammals, 30% of plants, and just over 20% of marine species are what's called endemic, meaning you will not find them
wow.
anywhere else. So just imagine a population of the craziest, most odd-looking, most unique, most fantastic creatures all roaming around in an environment that is completely free, no fences, virtually no sort of human interference at all. You'll see the occasional path or stairs that have been built just to make sure that you're not interfering with the natural landscape. And basically your day is – you get off, you land on an island, and you do a hike with your naturalist guide.
So there are no hotels on this island?
On the vast majority of the islands, there are none whatsoever. So your first decision when you're going to the Galapagos, first of all, you've made the decision to go. If you're listening, you should be going. All right, find a way to do that. There are various price points. I appreciate that it can get wildly expensive, but it can can be done for a somewhat reasonable price. Your first question is, well, how am I going to get around when I get there? You've got, from Canada, you're going to fly to Quito, the capital city of Ecuador, and inevitably you're going to have to fly through a town called Guayaquil. You can spend some time there if you like, or you can just continue on to the Galapagos. There's no point in sailing to the islands themselves. That'll take up too much of your time. There are a lot of cheap flights available through, and then you land on the island airport.
Okay.
And then at that point, you got to decide, am I going to do this land-based or sea-based? There are a growing number on the one or two populated islands of land-based resorts. And what that means is you'll be staying in a traditional hotel and they'll be taking you by their own boat for day trips each day. So you're going to be going to a different island within range of that base. So that is what I would recommend only if you're so petrified of seasickness, and there are some rough waves in those areas, that you feel, you know, I cannot survive on a boat at all. If you have the option to do a boat-based, a cruise-based vacation, I think it's a much better option. Your options just open up so much broader. You can travel so much further. You can see so much more, and you spend less time getting out to your individual islands.
Well, if you're doing the land-based and you've got to go by boat to each island, how long is that boat trip?
So that will depend on how far you're going, right? Some of the islands are very close together, so some things you're going to do on the very island that you're staying on. The giant tortoise reserve is on Baltra, the main island there, and that's probably where your resort is going to be, so you'll be able to do a relatively short drive and see that. Then you might do a one-hour boat ride one day, but as you go further afield, you're going to be spending perhaps 1.5-2 hours each way. Now you're talking about less time on the islands themselves, and you're certainly not going to get out to the farther out islands. You'll get a good taste of it, but given the option, I would recommend cruising. And when I say cruising there, you shouldn't have in your mind, you know, we've talked about cruising on the show before, you shouldn't have in your mind these giant mega yachts with 3,000 or 4,000 people. The largest ship typically that navigates from a tourist perspective in that area carries about 200 people. I think there's a Princess Cruise Line, and there's certainly National Geographic brings out a fairly sized ship. Now, if you can stomach it, I have a very strong preference, which is exactly the opposite that I have in the Caribbean, where I like the big cruise ships. In Galapagos, I much prefer to go small. And I've had the privilege of being there twice, both times on ships that held a maximum of 16 people. Neither were full at the time that we were there. So we had a very small, tight-knit group, one naturalist. And what it meant was your day is wake up in the morning beside some island, you get brought over by Zodiac typically, because even a ship that size can't dock. They don't want you to touch anything. There's no anchors in coral reefs. There's no disturbing or anything like that. So your Zodiac pulls up sort of near the island. You shimmy out over the edge and you do what's typically called a wet landing. So you might be up to your knees or even your waist in water. And then you shimmy onto land and there'll be no one else around. It may be your group and only your group, because that ship is allowed. It's given an entitlement saying we're going to be on this island for 2.5-3 hours. You've got that time slot basically for your cruise, and everybody else is off doing something else. So very tightly regulated. But what it means is you're walking through this incredible environment with animals that have become completely, maybe habituated isn't even the right term, but there's absolutely no fear. The animals sort of look at you and just ignore you.
Welcome back to the show. It's great to have you along. And here's a fun tie-in as Ed and I continue our conversation. After 9:30, I'm going to be talking to Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. She's a biologist, and she wrote a book called Raised by Animals, The Surprising New Science of Animal Family Dynamics. And Ed, it's what we can learn from animals about raising our kids. So this is going to be really interesting stuff. Ed Prucci is here, News Talk 1010 Chief Legal Analyst. Once every 4 weeks, he comes in for the segment, The Crime Traveler. And this week we're talking about the Galapagos, and you mentioned, which is fascinating, all of these species of animals that can't be found anywhere else in the world, but in the Galapagos.
It really is quite remarkable. And I mean, look, if we're being honest, a lot of these, so they're very specific subspecies. So to an untrained person, not your next guest as a biologist, you'd look at that and go, oh, that's a bird. What makes that bird so particularly unique? You're, of course, the naturalist on board, and every cruise travels with a certified, highly educated, really engaging, I've done this multiple times and always been very impressed with these people, naturalist, who's walking you through all this. Explain. Here's what's unique about this animal and why this animal does something that a very similar looking bird at the island just next door, you know, an hour sail away, does not do. It's developed and evolved in this particular way because of the plant life, for example, around it, or because of some other animal that's there. And of course, there's the big popular ones, the icons of the Galapagos, which are the giant tortoises. And the emphasis is on giant. These things are enormous.
How big are they?
They are larger than human beings in terms of their scope and mass.
Wow.
You would find, it's not uncommon to find ones that are 5-6 feet wide.
So they're like a mini Cooper.
I guess that's right. They look sort of like a smart for two.
Wow. Right?
And they move almost as fast.
Oh, really?
No, they're very, very plodding, and they're wild to watch. But the kinds of things that happen in the Galapagos, it's just so organic and so unique that, you know, you think that you're getting – that they're doing this special thing just for you. But having had the opportunity to go a couple of times, this is just the way it is there all the time. So on the two separate cruises I've been on, both times we were woken up at one point early in the morning by the captain saying, you know, if you want to get up and come out on deck, there's a pod of dolphins. You think, okay, that seems worth getting out of bed for. You're going to see one or two dolphins. Hundreds
oh my
upon
goodness.
Hundreds. And these are spinner dolphins typically. They're leaping in the air, doing their communication by spinning and doing flips. It's like Marineland or a SeaWorld multiplied by 20,000. And of course, it's all natural. These aren't trained animals. And when you go out onto into the field, your naturalist will always be drilling into you. You bring nothing with you other than water. So you're not dropping anything. You're not leaving anything behind. You will not find candy wrappers lying around. You will not even find a garbage can to dispose of stuff. Everything that goes out comes back. Everybody goes to the washroom beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing that on the island. But meanwhile, the animals have this kind of blasé attitude to people coming by, which is just they may be on the path that you can't stray from. And so what you have to do is just sit there and wait. And they know it. They absolutely know it. You'll be on the staircase back to the ship. There'll be a sea lion there. We had one instance where the sea lion came on board our ship. And interestingly, the captain had to advise us we can't leave. They're not allowed to move that sea lion. They can't scare it off. They can't push
it. They can't shush it off.
They can't sail with it off, because if they bring the sea lion to a different location, they've now changed the natural order.
But they can't encourage it to leave.
So we all just kind of sat there, had dinner, and eventually the sea lion left on its own. And as soon as that happened, you can see the crew were waiting. We were off just to get out. But you would not interfere with that. A baby sea lion slept on my foot, came over, just crawled onto my sandal.
So no fear of humans?
Absolutely none. It's like you're just another animal to them. And because they don't have the scenario where people are running after them, chasing, even the tourists seem, to me at least, on all the trips I've been on, very respectful of it, because it's drilled into you. You will not, you know, you can approach, but you can't leave the path. So if the animal's sick of you, it will simply walk off the path and you'll no longer see it. But when you're on beaches, you're not surrounded by two or three sea lions. There are hundreds, if not thousands. You're not seeing, you know, four or five of this bird. You're seeing flocks of flamingos that blot out the sun.
Hmm.
I mean, it's really just so special, I guess, is really the only way I can put it.
So if you're doing a trip and you go to Ecuador and you're including the Galapagos Islands and you're talking about a land base versus cruise type of thing, if you choose the cruise option or even the land base, but in your trip, how many of the islands will you visit?
So every cruise line has a very sort of rigidly set itinerary that they have to follow. And oftentimes they will be on what's called an AB with a flip and say, all right, this week we're allowed to go to these seven landing sites. Next week we're allowed to go to these seven. So I plotted my two different trips to make sure that I got both the A and the B separately. You won't see all of them on one trip unless you go with a tour company and commit to staying for 2 weeks just in the Galapagos, which is wonderful if you can do it. Not many people can. But typically, if you're doing a cruise base, so at a bare minimum, I'm not aware of any cruise companies that will offer you less than, I think, a 4-day excursion. And that's really just a taste. I would tell you, you probably want 7 to 10 days, and you're probably going to see 7 to 10 different islands, because your typical day is you'll come up in the morning, there'll be a landing site at one point. You'll then be given 2 hours to go do that landing site and the hikes that are in that area. Then you'll go back to the ship. You'll probably do something marine-based at that point. So you'll then go on a snorkel or a scuba dive or a kayak, and then you'll come back either to a different island or to a different point on the same island. And so over the course of your 7 to 10 days, you'll be covering, as I say, about 7 to 10 different islands. And they do look extraordinarily different. And as I say, you'll see animals that there's that same bird again, but this time it's not a blue-footed booby, it's a red-footed booby. And when I say blue-red, these are not colors that you would expect to appear in nature. They're the kinds of colors your kid just pulled out of a Crayola box and highlighted an animal's feet with. I mean, they're really quite remarkable and stand out, not like you would see anywhere else.
Is there anything commercialized on these islands?
So on the two biggest islands where you can actually land a plane, yes, there's some restaurants and there's some places that you can hang out. You will not see a McDonald's. I can't recall ever seeing a Starbucks. It will be local stuff like that. So there's a certain amount of commercialization. But really, once you get on that, and that's another reason why I prefer the cruise base as opposed to the land base. Once you're on your ship, you will not see that anymore. You may not even see another ship for a long period of time. It feels like you are alone in the world, just drifting off. When you land on an island, even the small ones, you'll you may be, as I say, the only ship there, which is another reason why I encourage people to make that step and go for the smaller companies. If you're on a 200-person vessel, they are not allowed – there's no island there where they will allow 200 people off at the same time. So you'll be given a time, and the ship will release zodiacs at various times, and some people will go to one hike, some people will go to another. When you're on a cruise with only 16, your whole group goes, and you really bond with those people. We didn't know them beforehand in some instances. Other instances, I went with family, so it just depended. But it's really something I encourage anybody to try.
And do you do most people combine Ecuador and Galapagos into one trip?
Yeah, if you're coming from North America, I mean, it is a bit of a schlep to use the Yiddish. So you've gone a long way to get there, right? To get to Quito, you're not likely going to be able to fly direct, to the best that I can think of. Plenty of flights through Miami or other places south of us. So you're probably looking at about 8+ hours just to get there. And there's a bit of a time change. And so you're addressing all of those things. So again, if you have the time, yes, you can do Galapagos in just a week, although you'll want some time. You have to get on the mainland, transfer over. I think you need at least 10 days. And I would say if you can commit 14, you can do a portion in Quito, in other places in Ecuador, and then head off to the Galapagos. And of course, Ecuador has so much more that you could do. You could never touch the Galapagos
Wow.
and still, you know, just wander through the rainforests and so many other places.
Somebody texted in, Antarctica has the same eco rules, very special. I remember we were in Mexico and we did the underwater caves.
Yes, and the cenotes.
Yes, and you had to do the shower because they don't even want sunscreen in the water. You know,
yeah.
Just you'll find nothing down there that's not pure.
So they do treat it, you know, much the same way. And they use sunscreen not on land, but you sunscreen on your boat before you get going. And if you're going to the water, they'll ask you not to do that. And,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see why. I mean, we had penguins approaching us while swimming in the water who were fascinated by my daughter's hair clips. And next thing you know, a penguin was trying to pull that out. The guide was very concerned. They don't want the penguin to choke on my daughter's
sure.
Hair clip. It's like those science fiction movies where, you know, you go back in time and step on a butterfly and everybody's worried that you've changed the world. So we're
yeah.
like, all right, we better be more careful about that next time. It's truly something amazing. And there's always a pressure on Ecuador to say, look, obviously they want the tourist dollars. There's, you know, they want to bring people in, but they are struggling. And I think maintaining a pretty good balance where they say, we will bring in significant numbers of tourists, but we will cap it. And that's why
yeah.
you also have to book very far in advance, because there are limited numbers of licenses granted. It's company by company. Once they're gone, that's it. You're going to have to book next year.
Great stuff. Where are we going next time?
Where are we going next time?
Do we know
so,
yet?
There's a couple of things on the horizon.
Okay.
I think probably what we're going to do is we're going to flip back from this amazing conservation and go back to something, the height of commercialism, and we'll talk Disney.
Okay.
And I think that just demonstrates to you that, you know, you can enjoy both ends of that spectrum. I'm not picky when it comes to that.
Ed Prucci, he joins us once a month for The Crime Traveler. Thanks for this.
You're welcome.